Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. From the Arts Desk, the lineup is set for this year's Muncie Three Trails Music Series. Artists include Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn, June 25th at Minnetrista. Bela Fleck is the winner of 15 Grammy Awards. The series continues at Cannon Commons in July, September, and October with the Steel Drivers, Junior Brown, and Joe Louis Walker, a member of the Blues Hall of Fame. The concerts are free, and more information is available at Muncie3TrailsMusicSeries.org. Muncie Civic Theater has the Cemetery Club starting June 5th and the Wizard of Oz starting June 12th. Muncie Symphony Orchestra has its Festival on the Green on June 13th. IPR and the American Association of University Women are holding a used book sale May 23rd through the 30th at the Ball State Alumni Center. This is at various times on those days, so check indianapublicradio.org for details. So you may have seen something recently about David Letterman. Has there been something in the news? As you probably know, he retires on Wednesday. While the late-night audience waves goodbye, Letterman likely won't disappear. There's plenty of speculation about what he might do next. In the meantime, he'll be remembered not only for his 33-year late-night career, but for the start he got in Muncie on WBST Radio at Ball State University. His first boss there was fellow student Al Rent, now the school's director of community relations.
I first met him in 1966 when he came to school as a freshman. And I was junior-senior. I always tell people I was on the extended learning program because I had so much fun in school. They almost literally kicked me out because I had so many credits because I kept taking another class. But that's another story. Dave was brought into WBST, which was, you know, the standalone today's public radio station, but I was the student program director. Dr. William Tomlinson was the head of the department, and he brought Dave in because Dave obviously had come into looking to try to find out about radio. And Dr. Tomlinson brought him up to me because I was, being the student program director, I was really sort of in charge of the station itself. And I scheduled the programming, I scheduled people, did the program logs. I mean, we were very student-driven with some faculty support. But remember, in the early 60s, it was a very small operation. And we had a whole 10 watts of power. So we used to say, with the 10-watt flamethrower of East Central Indiana, we'd make fun of that. And then we figured that the strength of our signal, as you know, Muncie or the Ball State campus, would be McGalliard Road to the north, Jackson Street to the south, New York Avenue to the east, and Tillotson to the west. And beyond that, you were taking a chance if you were going to hear WBST. So Dave came in, and there was this tall, lanky, gangly kind of guy, but he had a nice voice, and Dr. Tomlinson says, we have a very interested student, and I would like you to put him to work. I mean, there was no job interview because we were all students. So I said, that would be fine. Is there something you'd like him to do? And he said, no, you figure it out. And so Dave and I talked for a while, and then I said, okay, we broadcast from 3 p.m. until 10 p.m. because somebody figured that everybody went to bed after 10 and nobody listened to radio. So that was the sum total of our broadcasting schedule, Monday through Friday, no weekends, and nothing during quarter breaks.
Did you just sign off in the...
We just, WBST is now signing off the air. Thank you for joining us. Please join us next week, or tomorrow at 3 p.m. as WBST begins its continuous programming from 3 until 10 of classical music and news. That's all we did, classical music and news. So I said, Dave, could you write some material for us? Absolutely. So he started writing biographies and rewriting the biographies of some of the composers. We took a lot of the information. Google did not exist. Computers did not exist. We had typewriters. And so we would take the back of the jacket of the record, and we played records in those days, 33s. And we would take the back of the jacket, and every once in a while we would have had something from the library that we would get on the composers and or the pieces that were played. And he would write, and he really was a very good writer until he would sneak in these introductory pieces, his own version of a composer's life, family, or fictitious family, or whatever. And if he was reading it, he gave it a special touch. If another student was reading it, the other student was oblivious to what he was saying. Nobody caught on, including me, until Dr. Tomlinson called me down and said, I've been told by some faculty that some of our copy is not correct, and especially Mr. Letterman, who said, and I quote, Claire de Lune, written by Claude Debussy, was written for his wife Claire and all their little loons. And so the faculty had no sense of humor, and so he said, you have to take David off the air. So there are people said that I may have been the first to hire and fire David Letterman in his career. And probably on one level, that's true. On the other level, I just reassigned him. I didn't fire him. I just changed his job description. And not writing the copy for the introduction of the music, but writing news, which, where was my brain at the time? Guess what? He made up the news too. And so he would write strange stories and slip them in to the stack of stories that the news reader or broadcaster was going to read. And again, that person was oblivious to what was coming. And you know, John, how it goes. You start reading something and there's a moment of recognition when you realize this is not going well. And there were many times where the reader would realize in the middle of a story that they were reading absolute nonsense, but they were too far into the story, so they had to find a way to back out of it and move on to something that made sense. That's when I first met Dave. And we worked together for that year and part of the next, when I finally graduated, Ball State finally said, you have way too many credits, you need to graduate and get a real life. And I left school and took my degree and went on. But Dave and I became good friends. He was dating a beautiful young lady, very tall like him. So I felt very short. And in 66, when we met, I was married. I had been married for 1 year to Linda. And Linda is 5'2", and I was 5'10", and Dave is 6'2", or a little bit more, and Michelle was easily 6 feet. So we double dated a time or two and had great fun.
The Ball State of the mid-60s, different than today.
Well, totally. It's a much smaller place. We were only 2 years into being, well, in 66, we were only 1 year into being a university. And that was a major change in the university because you had to rearrange the way everything was done. You had to form colleges, and the ultimate goal was to have a college of sciences and humanities and a college of this, that, and the other, and fit departments into those colleges.
Al Rent, who met David Letterman in 1966 when they were both students at Ball State University. People say Rent was the first to hire and fire Letterman from his first broadcast job, though, as Rent says, he didn't fire David Letterman for creative embellishments on those classical music biographies. He just reassigned him.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook, drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com.
So how was Dave different from other freshmen? The head of the department brings him to you. I mean, what did you notice?
He knew no fear. And what's the old phrase? Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. That was Dave. And as you know, as a freshman, he had a look in his eye and a style that said he was very comfortable in his own shoes. I really believe when he looked in the mirror, he knew exactly what he was looking at. And so he would do things. And if there were negative consequences, I mean, there's a consequence to everything we do. Some are good and some are not so good. But he would just then detour and do something else. He just was never detoured from doing what he thought needed to be done. So the difference between Dave and most, actually, all the other students that I worked with or hired was that they followed orders and he made his own orders. You know, he would say, yes, okay, I got it. And I knew darn well it wasn't going to be that way. But that's probably what made us friends at that time. Because I tended to do somewhat the same thing, but I understood the politics of what I was doing and the university and Dr. Tomlinson. And I respected Dr. Tomlinson because he gave me lots of opportunities there. So I made sure that I did things as best I could the right way. Playing a little rock and roll at midnight on WBST.
Oh, tell that story.
Dave came to me one day and he said, you know, Al, what we need to do is we need to play rock and roll in the station. What is this classical stuff, you know? Nobody's listening. They want to hear rock and roll. And I said, well, Dave, we're a university station and our mission is to play classical music and do news. Let the other commercial stations play the rock and roll. That's what we're here to do. Well, we need to change that. And we knew that we were never going to do that during our broadcast hours. He wasn't going to sneak a rock and roll song in during broadcast hours. But we did get together one time and talk about what would happen if we would sign the radio station back on later after we signed off. So maybe it was a time when I knew no fear also, that I sent flyers to all the dorms and actually went and put them in mailboxes, and it said 12 midnight, WBST. And I'm trying to remember the frequency. Anyway, I'd say 12 midnight, WBST, 90.7, David Letterman's Make It or Break It. Listen to the best rock and roll. And so on a Monday night, we signed, we came back in the station. I did have the keys to the kingdom, so I could unlock the doors. And the transmitter was really in a room right next to us. It had one on-off switch and 3 meters that you could watch the levels, and that was it. It probably was no bigger than a bread box. And so I flipped the switch. We let it warm for just a few moments, and then we signed on. And the response from the residence halls was phenomenal. He played some of the worst rock and roll, John, you've ever heard. In those days, you had 45 RPMs, and you had an A side and a B side. And so the artist would record the A side, and that was the one that was on the charts and Billboard's top 100. But the B side was, I never figured out what anybody wanted with the B side, but you had to fill it with something. So he'd play only B sides, and they were ugly. And so he'd pick out one song, one record, and say, okay, here's my Make It or Break It song. Listen to this, call the station, and vote. Make It or Break It. And if you vote to break it, I'm going to break it into little pieces right here on the air. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the songs were awful. The votes were there. I was a phone answerer. Overwhelming number of calls. To me, that was an overwhelming number of calls, but it really got close to, within about a 20-minute period, 75 to 100 phone calls. And so he said, okay, the votes are in, it's to break it, and he would just crush this record in his hands and drop it on the desk, and we'd sign off. Thanks for being with us on David Letterman's Make It or Break It. Talk to you tomorrow night. On Thursday, he did the same thing. We went through the whole process, but the audience voted to make it, and that meant keep it. Well, that's okay. I didn't see any harm in that, except Dave says, well, since you voted to keep it, the first student in the door of our station here tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., I will personally present this record to you. And we signed off. And then I said, what have you done to us? I mean, you know, if these kids come, really do come, oh, nobody will come. Well, the next morning, 30 or 40 students are lined up outside the door, and Dr. Tomlinson comes, but David Letterman never comes. And I am there, And Dr. Tomlinson says, in his style, "Al, what are these students doing here?" And I said, "We did a survey last night before we signed off," which was, in one sense, correct. I just didn't put a timeline with it. And I said, "We wanted to see who was listening." And I always remember him looking around going, "This is marvelous." And we told the students we would give them, the first student in the door, a record. So the student is there. I've got a 45 that I cannot give him because Tomlinson would see that it would be some rock and roll song. So I threw the 45 into a classical jacket, and there's a photo of Dr. Tomlinson handing the student. And the student says to me as we're walking out, I'm thanking him. He's looking at the album going, "It's probably Brahms or Beethoven. What is this?" And I go, "It's inside. It's inside. Thanks."
That is Al Rent, a fellow student with David Letterman at Ball State University, reminiscing about Letterman's time here. Letterman's departure from the late-night airwaves has a lot of folks recalling his Indiana days. Coming up, Letterman stayed in touch with his friend and his special relationship with the school.
Roll over Beethoven, I gotta hear it again today.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
Have you had contact with him since he went off to find fame and fortune?
Yes, several times. There was a period of time where I got Christmas cards every year from The Late Show. And you can only imagine Dave's sense of humor and his firm, Worldwide Pants. Christmas, they were not traditional Christmas cards. They were kind of wacko. He would occasionally send me a note, say something kind or nice. We didn't talk much for the longest period of time until in 2000, Ball State had accumulated the nation's longest losing streak in Division I football. And he would go on the air on Monday with the highlights of the last loss, and on Friday would give a pep talk trying to get the team to win on Saturday. And it never worked out. We lost 22 straight games. But in that process, Dave's people would call and say, "Would you be willing to send us the video of the game? We can take some of those, quote, highlights or lowlights and put them on the air so Dave can use them." And then once Dave got on the phone with me and said, "I really appreciate this, Al. This is going to be fun." And we did. And ultimately the story, you know, goes that Ball State did break the string. We had 22 weeks worth, and that's almost two years worth of free national publicity, worth, in my estimation in those days, over $11 million in free publicity that obviously we could never afford to buy. And then we decided to cap it by taking him the game ball. And we did. I went to New York. They were dumbfounded that we were there. And then the producer said, "Mr. Letterman," it was always Mr. Letterman, "Mr. Letterman says he knows you and you went to school together." And I said, "Well, yes, that's true." "Well, he would like you to come on the show and present him the game ball." And I thought, I have just died and gone to heaven. There is a God and he's shining down on me. And so I literally carried the game ball on the show. He took my hand, went center stage. We chit-chatted for maybe 30 seconds. And then I went off. And I got home that night, because they tape early in the day, and I'm watching myself at home, and my son calls. And here's finally a father's justification for his very existence with his children. The phone rings and it's my son, Chris, who lives in Indianapolis. And he goes, "Well, what are you doing there? I just watched you on TV." And I went, "Well, you know, Jets, I hopped a plane. I flew home. I drove home from Indy. I am here watching it. I had so much fun. Well, that was pretty cool, wasn't it?" And Chris says, "Well, he said he really knows you." And I go, well, yeah, we've talked about that. And he goes, "Well, it wasn't that I didn't believe you, but..." So it's one of those things where all of a sudden you validate your very existence or your very life to your kids. And Dave and I talked a little bit after that. And then when he came back and did building dedication to the Letterman Communication and Media Building in 2007, David and my twin brother Andy, we were all three in what they called radio and television in those days, got together for about a whole 30 seconds. So it wasn't very much. But he came out and he looked at us and he goes, "Oh my gosh, the Rent Brothers, something about the Rent Brothers ride again." And so he put his arm around us. We took some photos. And that was that basically was the last time that I've talked to him.
He's been very loyal to the university.
He is a very quiet benefactor of many things, but especially Ball State. And his message to us was, "I don't want any publicity. However, there's the Letterman Scholarship to all C students before and after me." And Dave was not a C student. He was a high B student at worst. Very bright guy, but worked just hard enough when he was in school. Because he was, I'm sure he was having way too much fun. But he's provided that scholarship, and it is, for all purposes, it's virtually endowed. So it just keeps regenerating itself. And it's given for creativity. So he's been generous on that side. He made it very clear at the way back when that if the administration asked him for money, he was not going to listen to the request. But if students needed help, they should just feel free to get in touch with him. And that's where the generosity has come from. He has seen that working directly with students, as he was here, would be a better fit than working with old stodgy administrators like me who had other ideas of how we could use the money. The students would know that they wanted the money to help them in ways that were very, very student-centered and practical. And so his generosity has really spread quietly throughout the entire telecommunications program.
Al Rent, talking about David Letterman's days on campus and afterward. There have been a ton of articles and special moments on Late Night itself the past few weeks. I thought you might enjoy hearing from Al as Letterman wraps up his 33 years on late night television. And that is our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture of Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beauty Rest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.